So we're live.
Nerds, I think it's
Time for what?
time for a bit of enlightenment.
Oh
Hi
dear.
everyone, welcome to the Nerdy Up North podcast. It's a nerdy podcast hosted by Northern Nerds. I am one of your hosts, Sam.
Am the other host, Paul. And tonight is a special night. We're joined by how would I describe her? Like she's called Becky, so that's a name to start with. But she is one of the loveliest and most friendliest people I have come across on the interweb, which sounds strange, but because normally the interweb is full of weirdos and wackos. Yes, Chris, I'm looking at you. But yeah, she is one of the friendliest people and like one of the nicest people I've met on Instagram as well. She runs her own horror Instagram account, This Girl Loves Horror. I know I always like share her stuff and promote it because like she does great reviews and like her views are quite similar to mine, which is always great. And she hosts her own podcast called The Girl and the Gay Movie. Sorry, called it's called The Girl and the Gay Movie Podcast. I trust us to stumble over the gay. But yes, Becky, thank you for joining us up Nerd Enough. And again, you probably, if you are a part of the community, you will have seen a name pop up because she writes reviews for the Nerdy Up North website as well. Yes, so I bother her with that as well. So Becky, I did warn you before you were coming online as well to be prepared for this. Give us your nerdy credentials. So tell us a little bit about your nerd self.
Self. So I'm pretty much most a bit of a movie nerd, but mostly horror nerd. Just kind of grown up with horror, absolutely loved it, and now my horror collection, my like physical media, everything is just getting completely out of hand.
I wouldn't know anything about
We
that.
sympathize.
But yes.
So yeah, big horror fan, but yeah, I do like mixing it up and watching most genres of film. I'll give anything a watch. Sometimes you might see the odd review on my page if I've really liked a film or else it's something I really want to talk about, but it's not horror. I still kind of sneak it in there and hope nobody minds.
Those damn horror nerds, they always get a little bit because yeah, we did have someone on a while ago we were talking to who was in the horror community, and she said she was scared to post stuff about like her other interests because of reactions from people in the horror community or horror nerds like saying, oh, this is a horror page, you can't post that. But again, that shouldn't be like that. Again, fair enough, yes, predominantly horror, but it's what you love, what you're nerdy about, what you can talk about. You shouldn't be dictated to. So yeah.
No,
I'll
it
get me
took me. A,
I'll get me high horse a little bit, don't
I'll get on my
worry.
high horse about it because I have a lot to say on it, but I'll keep that for another time.
Yes.
It's your own page, so you can talk about whatever you
Yes,
want. There's,
and
yeah.
Becky's doing really well on her page as well. So I'd say I your growth over the last like say 6 or even 12 months has been amazing as well. What's the secret to
Crazy.
your success, Becky?
What did you do? I have absolutely no idea. I know I had one, my killer sofa clip that I shared of the movie that went a bit viral, and then from there, it just seemed to go up and up and up. And I have no idea why. I have lots of people message me asking for advice and if I can help them do it, and I'm like, I don't know what I do. I
Just being
think, you
yourself.
know, my just. My little reviews, it's madness.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I know, because Instagram's a weird thing. I know when I posted like a video clip of Watership Down, that went crazy. That was a
Sadists out
yeah.
there.
Everyone was loving that. But again, like it's weird because everyone like as you said always ask, oh, what can we do or how to do it, and it's like don't know. Just post what you like. Like yesterday, I think this week on the Facebook side, I posted a picture of Gizmo. The Muppet and looking in distressed, that's got
Yeah.
over 4 million views on the Facebook page.
Well, yeah. Gizmo.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Is that the one what he looks like now?
Yes.
A bit worn, yeah, I saw
A bit dead, but look unwell. But yeah, we are all at mercy of the wonderful art algorithm. But yes, we like to celebrate. But one thing I do like about your page as well as your honest reviews, and I'll be honest, I've stolen the idea a little bit and I've been doing my own little reviews from time to time on the movies I watch because I think it's a good way of doing it. And like I like your reviews because you don't try and be all like overly clever or anything like that. You are just a real person giving an honest opinion, and I think that stands out a lot more to the, all these ones that use AI to write the reviews. No, because you can see a lot of the ones that use AI to write their own reviews for stuff now, and it's kind of
like, oh, that's so lazy.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
To be honest, I wish it was like that. I wish I had it when I was a comic book reviewer, because that would have been so much easier.
Yes. So, Sammy, would you like to do the disclaimer?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, everything discussed in today's episode is our opinions and our opinions alone. If you'd like to discuss anything from today's episode, please come and join us on the Facebook page. You can come and join the Nerdy Up North Discord or the comments section, where we can have an open discussion. But what we won't have is anyone coming for us and telling us our opinions are wrong. We can all agree to disagree in fandom. So let's keep it fun, keep it kind, and keep the toxic behaviour out of nerdism.
Yes. And I'm hearing the chat going idiots as well, like talking about being sluts and stuff. Lee and Chris are in there. Oh, we've got a lovely Becca and Sarah. Nice to see you.
And Phoebes is there. Phoebe. Hi, everyone.
Yes.
Yes, hi everyone. Hi chat. It's Sunday. And I apologise if I keep turning my head and looking over. The cats are fighting on the windowsill already.
Right.
So we're here. Yes. We're here for Heretic.
Yes.
Or as I have called it all week, Heritage. It's
not a name for dyslexic, shall we say.
Honestly. Yeah, I totally agree. So yeah, I have the tagline, and it is only one tagline.
Mm-hmm.
Question everything.
Which is quite apt. So, mm-hmm. with we having our lovely guest on the for the first time, what did you think of the movie in general? Because this came out of nowhere. Like, it literally was advertised, I think, when I went to the cinema. We got a trailer. And it was 2 weeks later when this film was released. I was like, how have I not heard anything? How have I not seen anything about this movie? Especially with Hugh Grant basically being this interesting character, shall we say, at the start with.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've watched it twice now. Second time, just to prepare for this. But yeah, agreed. I don't remember seeing anything for this. It was just out, and I remember people talking about it, saying more so praising Hugh Grant. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought definitely made you think, want to make you think, which yes. I think is great. I I had my opinions on it. I have my opinions on religion, but and yeah, I just thought it was good. I wasn't such a fan of the ending, like where it went.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, but watching it this time,
yeah,
I'm really kind of getting my head around, because there's a lot of talk in this film, there's a lot of dialogue to take in.
Heavy.
And I think more again what they're saying at the end and explaining it a bit more, it made sense for it to have gone that way, so I preferred that the second time around.
I totally agree with that. This is not doing the movie down, but this is a very much, I would say, a home viewing film that is better taken in rather than, like, I know in the cinema you get the experience, but you take a lot more in. You can take your time with a movie like this in watching at the home. And even, like, I know I wouldn't not annoy people, but if you're watching it by yourself, it is a very good film to pause, to kind of like to try and take in what's just happened or take in the conversation, because the conversations are so well done, so well you can get led down different paths, because that's what it wants to do. It's trying to trick you to think in one thing and push you down the hole and another. I love this movie simply because it didn't follow all the basic horror movie like tropes or the rules. It kind of broke the rules. It's like, and this is going to sound really strange me saying this, the victims in this movie, the two girls, they make zero bad decisions in this movie, where if you go in a horror movie, they're like, oh, I wouldn't have done that, or I wouldn't have done that. They're doing what they can, but they don't make any wrong moves in this movie. It just plays out the way it feels natural. You don't normally get that in a horror movie, and it kind of like, that's what kind of took me out like by surprise. quite a bit with this movie. What about you, Sam?
I only watched it, I only finished it about an hour ago, but the funniest part of it is this isn't the only movie out there that's called Heretic.
No.
There's actually two.
Yeah.
And it's a good job, a really good job, that because the link broke on the first one because I was watching the complete wrong film.
Right, okay. Was it any good though, the one, was it?
It was English.
Right.
And it was horror.
Right.
And I was like, okay, so where's the two people at? Because I knew the basic story was two. Mm-hmm. It didn't give us any genders. It just said two people go to a house and Hugh Grant lives there. It was not that. It was a priest. Someone had just hung themselves, and the priest had. And it was. I was like, okay, right. Where does Hugh Grant feel? Where's the Mormons at? What's going on here? So I was so happy that the link broke, because then I eventually found the actual one. Mm-hmm. And I fell asleep several times while watching it, to where I had to go back to the beginning and watch it again. It's been a long day. It had no bearing on the movie whatsoever. It literally had been a really long day, and I was very tired. I wasn't questioning anything. I was more agreeing. There was a lot of things that Hugh Grant was saying that I was like, oh yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I actually agree with the overall message, the control and power of religion. Questions, I weren't left with any. Performances, blown away.
Yeah.
Completely blown away. And the two girls were fantastic, but the one with the blonde hair, she blew my mind, because all the way through you're thinking she's really naive, and she's very, at the beginning when you introduce to her, she comes across as quite vulnerable and gullible, especially when she interacts with the girls, and I was so angry for her, because she was interacting with them like a person would. But yeah, you think to yourself, that vulnerability and that gullibility is like, it's gonna hurt her.
Yeah.
And it actually doesn't.
No.
So when the switch happens in her character, it's such a shock, but it's such a fuck yes moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I was so happy for her. There was nothing I hated about this film whatsoever. I just wish I didn't fall asleep on the first viewing.
It's interesting though, when Becky said about the ending though. Because this is, I think I was at the same point. This was so close to going off the rails, because everything was so well done. Everything was so well paced. And the ending, it could, if it went a little bit further down the route of what it was possibly going to do without going into it straight away. This was so close to almost spoiling it with where it went. But Hugh Grant's performance kind of brought it back, and his monologue at the end where they had the almost like the final moment when they're standing off against each other kind of like brought it back. So then, this is where this movie kind of like held up better, because if they had someone else in that role, that wouldn't have worked as well. And it's weird though, because we're talking about like the cast is in, like, Hugh Grant, Sophie Thatcher, Chloe East are the main three. And a really weird cast, Topher Grace.
Topher Grace?
Yeah.
Topher Grace, at one point, because I thought he was going to play a bigger part than what he did. Yeah. And when he stood at the door, I was like, I'm actually more scared of you than I am of Hugh Grant right now. I don't know what's going on with this. It was so pointless. You could have had anybody play that part, and it just... Okay, someone went looking for them. Mm-hmm. All right, had to be Topher Grace.
But do you not think that's the genius part of it? Because then it questions, and you think there's going to be a more to it, and you're always
a little bit,
and you're always waiting or thinking, there's going to be a superhero moment, like a White Knight moment, where he's going to rush in and save the day.
But don't need it.
No, and that's the thing. But the two girls, like Sister Paxton and Sister Barnes, were absolutely beautifully, performed by the two actresses in this as well. They kind of You wanted them to be safe. You wanted them to look right. And again, with them not making, again, going back, with them not making the stupid mistakes that you get in the horror movies, like, oh, I'll be right back, or we'll split up, or...
We'll take the other door.
We'll be aggressive in places where you probably wouldn't be aggressive type thing. You kind of got behind them so much more, and you were like, think, and when, like, say, Sister Barnes's, like, when her kind of, like, death, or what you think is a death scene, happens, it comes so out of the blue and such a shock that you're just like, fuck.
I thought I blinked. Yeah. So I was like, hey, what just happened? How did that happen? I didn't see it coming at all. The girl with the dark hair, I can't remember their names, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Sister Barnes. That was Sister Barnes, yeah.
The end credit song?
Mm-hmm.
That's her.
Right, all right, interesting.
I listened to the whole thing. It was absolutely beautiful. That girl's voice is stunning. But yeah, that's her singing that song.
Right, okay.
She was absolutely brilliant. She played such a great counterpart to a character at first who looks incredibly nervous. She was the strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like at least yours come up to you. I'm just like fighting amongst us. Yeah. She it's like almost like you could see her getting the strength from her, like kind of like thinking, because she sits there and goes, when she's saying, right, okay, question him, question him, like be logical with him. That's something that was said to her earlier on. So she is learning and she is picking up. Mm-hmm. So yeah. She is listening. So I love the character progression of her. I feel like you needed the other one to get her where she needed to be, for her to figure everything out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't walk away with any questions. I did walk away with one.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why did Hugh Grant feel the need, or Mr. Reed, I should say.
I feel the need
for speed. I just wanted the need of the point he was trying to prove. He knew that religion has a form of control.
Yeah.
So he knew that already. He'd been and looked down the roots of religion. He'd gone through every single one of them. He explains it brilliantly with the Monopoly metaphor. But why continue? Why? What's the point you are trying to make?
Power? That was it.
I understand that, but it's like you've already proven it. So what's the next bit? Where are you going to go after that?
He's a very intelligent man that's got issues, shall we say. And I think that's putting it loosely.
That is putting it mildly.
That, again, but if you talk to any type of like kind of serial killer or monster in that type of like through, like, why did you do that thing? It's one, because they can. And two, it's just like, as I said, a total control thing. And again, anyone who's kind of like out there and like does horrible things, it's like a reaction and control.
Yeah.
And again, like how powerful, and if he's doing, the way I took it from it, the way he's looking is like, he's trying to find the one true religion, one true God. Mm-hmm. He's got this power of life and death over these women, then he has that power. He's got the power of a God.
So it is more of a serial killer, psychopath, like sociopath kind of tendencies, as opposed to being a man who is looking for an answer because, of, quite frankly, he already has the answer.
Yeah.
He is just out to torture, control, and kill.
Yeah.
Yeah?
He's almost like a teacher type role. He's like, I'm going to teach these young women, that's the point. And it does it in such a brutal way. And the performance, again, Hugh Grant, like mesmerizing from the moment you see him at the doorstep, and the glimpses of the sinister, like kind of going through, like when they're having like question and answers, he's being this jolly person, trying to talk about religion in a way that is both inviting and controversial at the same time. But and then they're basically trying, like, work out, or just trying, like, they think he's basically playing him, but he's playing them at all. But every little slip up or little mannerism that changes is done so well. It's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, I didn't know which Hugh Grant I was getting, and that's what scared us more than anything. I'm not getting Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill guy. Not getting the most reason, because I feel like Hugh Grant is just... Oh, he's just making some really good choices. I said this Can't remember when I said it. I've said it at some point. Oh no, that was it. I read an interview with him about this, and he said he was just he it took him 4 months to decide to do this movie because he didn't know where it would lead, because he's sick of being typecast. He was typecast for such a long time, so he was like, oh God, if I start doing horror, is this where I'm gonna be, you know, heading down? Or if I start doing this, and he's like, no, I need to start taking more chances. And oh boy, does it pay off, because he is, I was saying to Paul before we came on, when you got him in The Gentleman, you know exactly what kind of person you deal with. The costume tells you that. When you're watching him with the D&D, Honor Amongst Thieves, again, the costume helps you to know who you're looking at and who you're dealing with. This is ordinary. He dresses basically. I don't know where he is, and it makes him more terrifying. And the fact that his tone kind of doesn't change throughout the whole film,
Very
apart from his
calm.
little, really calm, like scarily calm, especially when he's talking about the door mechanisms. And he's like, oh yeah, they don't open. Like that's a common thing. Like it's just a common thing that my door does not open. I have a timer on it. I mean, we should have figured that out by the timers on his lights, which really annoyed us, by the way. I was like, why?
And like when he said, when they walked in, I only noticed it on the second watch. I didn't pick it up the first time. But when they first come in, he says, oh, you know, there's metal in the walls and ceilings, you don't mind, do you? And they're just like, you know,
No.
whatever, brush it off. But then later he's like, well, I did tell you that there was metal and you're okay with it. And it was just things like that, the way he's like, I mean, he's not lying. He didn't lie
He's
to them.
not.
Them. They just.
That's the terrifying part of it. He didn't lie at all.
No,
He was. He was.
I'll argue that
Second
case
one.
because he lies about his wife.
Wife.
Because
Well, he had a woman there. He just, you know, it might have. It's a little white lie that she's not his wife, but there was somebody there.
there was no pie being cooked.
There was
Yeah.
the Mormons. The Mormons had a few things to see on this movie, even though it isn't. I thought it was going to be a very Mormon-centric movie, and it really isn't. It focuses on all different aspects of religion. Just it just so happens that the Mormons are the two main focals. But the Mormon Church didn't like it. They basically
Do they like
said,
anything though? But you cannot really, can't go off that one.
I don't want to start because then I'll start saying things that could potentially get us taken off or have people knocking at our doors.
tired.
They're crazy, fucking crazy. But no, they basically just said that they didn't like the idea. They said it was damaging to women. That's what they were saying. Is that there was basically it was because it was physical violence against women. That's what they absolutely hated about it. And then people questioned because they kept mentioning they needed a chaperone, and it is true. What they were saying is true. Mormons do need chaperones. They need to have some. They can't do anything on their own. At certain levels in Mormonship, they have to be with somebody, and the person they are with also has to be with somebody. Especially so if it's a female, they would just prefer another female there, or if, you know, male, another female, vice versa when it comes to the males as well. And
So,
everyone was going, so why
so,
did Topher Grace did not have one? Because Topher Grace is a senior member of the Mormon Church and
Just
he
as it
doesn't
comes an
need
elder,
one.
yeah.
Yeah, he's an elder, he doesn't need one.
So
So then
coming back to the movie that asked the question though, because I know you like I pretty much give my point of view for this bit. Do you see this as a religious horror, like in the form of like say The Omen or like The Exorcist and stuff like that, or do you see this as a serial killer like type horror film,
psychological,
psycho killer?
yes. For me, definitely more psychological, although a lot of the talk and most of the film is about religion. Still see it more as a psychological because of the way it makes them think and the way he approaches things, the way he puts things to the girls to make them question things like the door. I remember when we first watched it and they had to choose between the doors. I kept saying to like my boyfriend, like, what if one of them is just a way out? Like, but they're questioning, like, because he's saying the way out is this way. What if he's just telling the truth? I know it turned out that he wasn't at all, but
No.
I was like, but they're questioning it. And they were just like questioning everything. And yeah, I just like that. So a bit more psychological for me, I think.
I agree. I'm more on the, it's a psychological thriller ride than it is. I love religious movies. Like, the two of my favourite movies of all time is Omen and The Exorcist. I don't see that. Religion is just one counterpart to it. It's just the, it's the opportunity to be able to be creative with your killings, basically. So I don't see it as a religious style movie.
I totally get that. And because there was a point where I thought they were going to go down that route when they were in the pit and down the, well, the cellar type thing. And we got the magic act, which I know it sounds really blasé describing it that way, because in essence, that's what it was. It's like smoke and mirrors, get you to look one way and would do the illusion here. But when he was trying to convince him that a miracle had happened when this disheveled...
I was believing it. I was like, really? But again, I'm gullible.
But it was just an interesting take, because, again, I'm not saying this is a perfect movie or, like, say, thing. I enjoyed it heavily. There was elements to the movie where, when I watched it back the second time, I was kind of like, this bit... Again, we can use movie magic, but how they've done the switch in the bait, like, you would have, one, they got them to go upstairs, fair enough. Moving the table, I can understand. But how did they get the layer of mud over the grate to hide it the way it did? Because that would have showed signs of moving.
Movie magic.
Just movie.
It's how you explain anything. If you can't explain it, you just go, movie magic. Yeah, I wasn't really paying too close attention to that, because I genuinely thought we were watching a miracle take place.
Right.
It wasn't until I think I got it when she got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I've really liked about this movie, is that a character I didn't think I was going to have any connection with whatsoever, I actually had more than what I thought. I was like, oh, I am very much this person. How she was so sweet in the beginning, how she listened to everything. She when he asked her something, she asked, like, oh, how did you know? How do you know that? She asked questions, and she asked good questions as well. I don't think I'm that clever. Like, I wouldn't, like, I'm an erratic mess, so I would, like, just be all over the place. But she was, it was when she started to figure it out, I started to figure it out. And I was like, oh, I like this. I do like this.
There was a lot of stuff that was in there just to purely make the audience feel uncomfortable and unnerved. Like, when they went into the kind of, like, because this is like a maze or like a escape room type thing situation, where the first room is basically where he's kind of interviewing them, having a conversation. You get the candle when he turns the candle around. When she turns the candle around, is such an interesting play.
I thought something was in the candle. I generally thought there was. If you looked at it, it looks like there's something in it, and I'm like, what's in there? What's in there? I never even thought it would be like, oh, it's blueberry scented.
I love how they did that scene as well, because the camera was focused, like, as she was turning, the camera was on her face, so she reacted before we saw what was going on. So you see her reaction, and you're like, what? And then it, like, pans to the blueberry pie scent, and you're like, oh my god.
But again, with, like, horror movies as well, a lot of people, a lot of horror movies now, they want to rush in to get the jump scare, or they rush in to get, like, the payoff. It's just a little bit of taking the time, a little bit of patience. Like, a little scene like that can then fill you with, like, horror movie, you don't have to get the jump scare and go, oh, it can get that belly feeling. Like, you know, when you get that bad feeling in your belly, like, oh, this is not going to go. And that's what this done well. And going to, like, the second stage of, like, the escape room is when they go to the, like, the church, like his altars, and you see, like, the water feature inside, which was just bizarre. It was like a dripping from the roof.
I loved it, though. Yeah. I loved it.
What's coming with that.
Yeah.
But it was when it went off, when the noise clacked, and you were like, oh, shit. Yeah. Like, that is another, like, oh god moment. Like, yeah, the pacing of this movie was perfection. I feel like a lot of horror directors, James Wan, needs to really take note of timing, because Paul's right, you don't need to rush to get to the jump scare. The when they're in the cellar and the ladies, they've done the whole thing's happened, and she's risen from the dead, and she's behind her.
Yeah,
how slow it takes you to get, you know, she's there, But it's how slow the camera takes you to get round to see her, that she's actually behind her, and it's like, oh shit, oh shit. Like, it's such a build-up moment, and it's something that really is missing in horror, is like a build-up of just, like, I was going to say suspension. That is not the word at all I'm looking for.
And again,
Christ.
this is why, like, the home viewing's important for this movie, because I didn't notice this in this when I was outside of the cinema watching it again, and the things I actually rewound and could. When she utters the word "it's not real," Mr. Reed, like, Hugh Grant's demeanor and everything changes, like because, you know, when they're describing it back and says, oh, like at the end when she's giving the monologue saying, you basically panicked, you this wasn't part of the book, this person went off book, and this is where you've been making it up as you go along. You can see that in the second time I watched it, I was like, that is so fucking brilliant, like, for a performance wise, because you don't notice, like, the nuances and stuff. It's like, because until that point he's so sure, he's so direct, he's got an answer for literally everything.
Everything.
And the panic is when, like, he slits Miss Sister Barnes's throat, and again, that is done so brutal. And
The
not just that,
burn.
and he's trying to use the fact, oh, she'll come back to life, don't worry. And she's like, oh, it's just she's got this implant in it. And again, this is a movie that's scary because of how uncomfortable it makes you feel. This scene when he rakes in her arm to get the implant out is so uncomfortable. It's
When he pulls the vein out, you went, oh nope, that's a vein. But you could, like, it's the noises. It's not so much the act itself, it's the noises that goes with it. But the minute he pulled that out, I was like, that's a contraceptive device. That's but for a very small second in my head, I was like, oh my God, are we going down like AI, like, is it going to be so? Is this where we're going? So I love the idea that it kind of threw us for a second until I looked at it properly and went, no, that's a contraceptive device. And she shouldn't have that in her.
No, but she Mrs. Sister Barnes was more of a street smart than, as you said, Sister Baxton. That was the kind of payoff.
One was very much in the religion than the other one was,
Yes.
I felt anyway.
One was just going through the motions
Well,
type thing.
both of them were actually part of Mormon families. They both were brought up in Mormon religion,
All
the two
right.
actresses. So
Interesting.
they have a lot of experience when it comes down to the Mormon ways of life, but they are no longer in the Mormon church.
Right. One thing I wanted, because with, like, movies like this, and they've got a small cast and the performances there, like, this reminded me so much of, like, movies like Phone Booth and the Ryan Reynolds movie Buried as well, like, where the tension's kind of focused on, like, the conversations or, like, the situations and how you would react in these type of situations. Again, I know I probably wouldn't last very long in this type of situation, because I would probably just, like, freak out and be conflict. Do you think you would be as calm as Sister Barnes and Sister Paxton in this type of situation?
No.
What about you, Becky?
No.
Do you think you would survive?
Oh God, no, I'll be dead in a
Well, I
second.
probably never would have gone in the first
No,
place.
no.
I'd have been back on my bike, but no, once in there, I'm certainly not clever enough to have those conversations and like have answers for him or knowledgeable on religion. But I probably would have been gullible and been like, oh well, if you're telling me that's the exit, I'm gonna go down the exit. Been
Me
like,
too.
I
But I feel like if he's having these, the type of conversations he was having about religion, I would actually sit there and be in agreement with him. I think it'd be quite hard for me to kind of pull myself away from the actual conversations, because everything he was saying, even down to the actual of his point he was making, is all true. It's
Yeah.
all true
True
religion.
religion.
In my eyes anyway, like, I'm not speaking for everyone, you know, we
Yeah.
all have our different opinions on religion, but I just felt for me, I was like, oh, I would find it very hard to be able to pull myself away from that conversation. Don't get us wrong, if he starts going crazy, that's it, I'm fucked. Like, I'll be dead in a second. I'll never survive. I wouldn't even be de bright enough to, like, if he says that's an exit, I'll be like running in the opposite direction. I'm that stupid. But conversation-wise, I feel like I would find it hard to leave that conversation.
There was a conversation in this movie as well. I thought Sammy would have got, like, so excited about,
Laugh
because
me arse off at it.
because Sammy Apsi, like, she is the self-proclaimed biggest fan of Jar Jar Binks as well. Yeah. And the way he brings it, the way he brings in into the conversation, well, it breaks the tension that is needed, because if it's... this was, it was so well needed, and it's
the
just
impression.
Yeah.
It sounds like my impression of him. Oh god. And I was like, he goes, oh yeah, and imagine if Jar Jar Binks, no, he just kept calling him Jar Jar, and they were like looking at him, Daphne was going, sorry, Binks, he was going, Jar Jar Binks.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started doing the impression, imagine if he was the Messiah. And I was like, yes, yes, people, just imagine. I was trying to look for a decent quote for the beginning on the Jar Jar Binks one, but it just didn't fit.
No.
Nothing fit. I was expecting out of this sermons and, you know, passages, like religious passages that I could kind of use, and it was absolutely nothing, because it was not the film I was expecting. I was expecting a fully Mormon-centric movie.
No, but this, if you, like, again, if, I don't know if, like, say, you'll probably need some time to watch it again. There's so many pop culture references in this movie as well that you went, I missed it the first time, but I flipped out with a Spider-Man reference.
Yeah,
it's
the whole reason they had Topher Grace in there. Sure.
Possibly.
It's when she goes, but it's when she turned around and went, Spider-Man, and he just looked at her like,
No.
Play tour. Even I got a lesson from that.
But yeah,
I was like, oh, I didn't know that.
And I love the use of music in this as well to kind of tell the story
Did it have to be Radiohead though?
Yes, because that's like
that song, true. Creep is so much.
I know, but it's a true story though, that, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and the whole Lana Del Rey thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I think Ed Sheeran's kind of put an end to copyright lawsuits in music, because he proved that on his last one that you could literally copy any music by just using three notes.
Right.
I could be completely blown this story out. I just remember picking it up at the time, but he proved it in court that you could quite literally just with three chords, you could use it in any song. And it was like a numerous of songs. And he went, so you can't really, unless you have something against these three chords, nobody can be done for copyright.
Right. Yeah. All right. That's interesting.
It was something along those lines. It was very clever. But it was clever what he did, and he has kind of, because he literally was being taken to court every year over a song that he is supposedly ripped off. But that story from, I can't remember the original band, but then creeped to Lana Del Rey, that is true.
Right, so interesting.
But, I liked the game board reference as well.
The Monopoly one.
I made it out with the books, and, you know, this is the original one, this is the original, like Judaism and the original Monopoly. I can't remember what it was called before. And then this is Christianity and comparing it to this. And I was like, that's done so well. I don't know if...
I did a bit of a read just to understand it a bit better, because it was going so quickly. And then obviously you move on to the next bit. I was like, oh, I'm kind of like interested where he was going with this. And it literally is just Monopoly is the board of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or the Monopoly franchise, I should say.
But you can put that to like any type of board, but it was, and in a way, the way the spoken questioned this movie, because I know, as you said, the Mormons weren't very happy, but they weren't happy, as you said, they weren't happy with the tones or the context of the movie. It was more with the violence towards the women, if that's the case. Because I don't
think there was nothing to do with the actual religion itself.
Yeah, but there was no disrespect towards any of the religions. Like with anything that was used, because he never once says anyone's wrong or anyone's got like wrong beliefs. He's just saying question them beliefs. I think that's quite a strong and powerful message, especially for a horror movie at the same time. Because to be fair, this movie goes deep, and it has no right to. At the same time, it's basically a serial killer movie with when he's trying to basically, it's like a spider playing with the fly, playing with the prey. It's like he's moving the pieces to get there. And the whole set piece is like a board game or like a maze. And I love at the end when she's kind of like escaped, they have the whole weird, like face off. but that model was just absolutely amazingly put together, and trying to work out an exit from that model as well.
The shot where it shows you her in the model running to when it like literally brings it out to the door. Oh, that was beautifully done. There was a lot of beautiful shots in this movie. What got me was the window.
Yeah.
When they kept looking up at the skylight up the top, and I was like, I don't get it. I still don't quite get why they keep looking at it, what they're looking at.
So the way,
up there.
So the way I thought, I didn't think looking at it that anyone was going to fit through that because it was thin.
I mean, how are they going to get up there?
But like on each other's shoulders, but you're in a desperate situation, you're looking for things. But the way I thought, get near the window with the phone, get a signal, because as you said, everything's surrounded by metal.
Ah, right, okay, that makes sense.
That was
okay.
Kind of the impression I got from watching it. That was there, like trying to plan the escape route or how to get out of there. But the whole, because I don't know how to explain that she had a throat cut, she looked dead, he raked in her arm. She didn't move or flinch. Then half an hour later, she comes back to life and has enough strength to put that plank of wood with the nails on in the back of his head.
So that was very foreshadowed, obviously.
Yeah.
But by the time we got to that point in the movie, I'm like, well, there's no way to use it now.
Mm-hmm.
She's completely... The girl who's just been stabbed in the stomach, she can't get to it. Mm-hmm. So... he's not going to know it's there because he didn't see it get put there.
No.
So, okay, that's gone. And then for her to come out of nowhere. But when she was on the floor, I don't know if you've noticed, she wasn't, you could hear her. She was gurgling a bit. Her hand was moving a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it either a very slow death or something else was going to come. I'm not going to lie, I did not see it. Her rising from, the dead. I thought that was pretty impressive. We talked about the heavy dialogue in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a heavy dialogue film. I'm a very big fan of Tarantino's movies, and it really comes down to the fact of how great he is with dialogue. And this movie had something really similar to that. But my favorite part was right at the end with the prayer experiment.
Right.
I absolutely love that, where she's saying, "Do you know about the prayer experiment?" Where, because the last words he ever says is pray, pray for us,
right?
And she says, "Well, do you know praying doesn't work?"
Mm-hmm.
They did the prayer experiment where they had one room in one had patients in one half, patients in the other half. Mm-hmm. One half prayed, the other half didn't, and they both had the exact same fate.
Mm-hmm.
So it was proven prayer doesn't work, but we do it, and we do it because it's the only one thing that we can do as a person. To think and be considerate of somebody else.
Right, okay.
And I absolutely loved... One, I love the delivery. Because she's doing it while she's like gripping on the restaurant. And he is literally climbing all over her. I think he wanted a cuddle.
Right.
I honestly think he wanted human contact. Yeah, I think he wanted human contact at the end, because the way he was going in, he wasn't going to hurt her. He couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
He went in and he kind of like went to lean on her chest.
Yeah.
Like tilted his head and like kind of leaned in. And I was like,
sobbing, wasn't he? Like,
And I was like, oh my gosh, he wants human contact. He wants a cuddle before he goes. That's crazy. Like, you're a fucking lunatic. But yeah,
it was quite funny that he asked her to pray with everything he believes.
It was such a bizarre line, but if it got that bit at the end with her talking about the prayer experiment, I was more than happy for him to say that, because it was the fact that she says, and we do it for the fact that it's something for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for us. It's we do it for somebody else. And then she starts praying.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely love that part. I actually got chills when she was talking about that. Nearly started crying when she started praying. Because again, for everything that's just happened and everything that she's just been through, she's still thinking of him. And what he is going through in this moment, his pain, his suffering.
She was crazy. She was quite a selfish person, like a selfless person. Sorry, but it's interesting you said before, because a key word I think used, like foreshadowing. There was a few elements that was foreshadowed throughout. The stick with the nails on. You always knew that was going to come back to play.
I just didn't know how.
The butterfly as well was quite an interesting take. How?
So who was that at the beginning? That's all I kept thinking of. Who are you?
And I was quite the only other thing that you could like. So it was a nice way to end, and that you knew she got out and anything like that. Again, devil's advocate, like to me, would it be quite interesting if they ended it like when he died? Like you don't know if she got out. Because again, that would have been like I say, a good way to like answer any question, like keep the question there. Because it could have been, but
the
maybe,
conversation going.
But that may be just the sadist in me wanting to be a little bit darker thing.
I'm not too fussed on the ending. Mm-hmm. I wasn't. It was what I love though is when she gets outside, and obviously we've seen throughout the movie the atmosphere outside is horrific. The conditions are terrible. The color palette that's used is just grays and darks, and that. So when she finally gets outside and she's free, it's light. It's just a very
the storm's like, over type thing.
It's over her, and there's just a bit of snow in the air, but there's blue skies and it's bright. And then as she puts her hand out, the butterfly lands on her finger, and obviously our friend had told that story in the house where when she dies, she would love to be a butterfly to come back. There was moth references used. There's a lot of butterfly references used in this movie because it's all about like reign of rebirth. But there was a moth thing in there, which I must have completely missed. When I was reading IMDb, they said that there was moths used, and they were to pay homage to Silence of the Lambs. Buffalo Bill does exactly the same thing, just in a different way than what Mr. Reed did.
I wonder if Mr. Reed was skinning them and saying, "Would you fuck me?" But so
the lotion on its back or gets the hose again. Imagine Hugh Grant saying that.
I'll start singing. So we've talked about the ending as well, because Becky said at the start that like the ending nearly got away from you. So what was it that kind of like worried you a little bit about the ending there?
I thought it was just going down the same old path that, like, your barbarians. As soon as you saw this woman, I just thought, oh, we've got this crazy, odd-looking, messed-up creature-type person. And I thought, oh, it's going to go down your monster in the basement kind of route, barbarian, the same ones that we've seen before.
Yeah.
So I was a bit like, oh. I more like the idea of when we were in this like the room before they went down the stairs of like, is there actually an exit and questioning stuff and the conversations they were having. And then that really got me like, I'm really loving this. And then I just thought, oh God, it's going to go down in that direction. But obviously you do get a bit more. The conversation, and like you say, when she does find the rest of the women, and the way out and stuff like that, so it kind of brings it back to make more sense. But yeah, the first watch, I was a bit had that drop of, oh God, we're gonna get one of these movies.
It's gonna be the same old. No, I get that. I think for me, what was kind of like a turning point, which I didn't expect, was the key in the pocket. Like the realization and the thought process for that was so well done. Like, because I just thought it was just a throwaway, or he's been through her pockets and put it back in the wrong thing. I thought they were just going to leave that as like a clue that it's sinister and thing. But when you get to the face off and the realizations is, no, you didn't put the key in the wrong pocket. You wanted this to be me. You've basically planned this and chose me to be this person this way from the get-go. Yeah. That kind of like got me even more. I was like, this is just absolutely took the film to the next level just for how clever it was, because I wasn't expecting that.
Give me a bit of a Scooby-Doo moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reveal of the plot, and if he turned around and said, "No, I would have gotten away with it too," I'd have lost my mind. But I do love the aspect of where she's piecing it all together, because it's not a case of she's figuring it out as she goes along. She knows before she's even said it, while she was walked just before she started to talk, and she knew exactly what she was going to say. A conviction of it makes that delivery so much better and even more scarier for her. That it's like, She's not the person you thought she was when she walked into that house. Because for me, I had a clear picture of who she was. She was very new to the religion, you know, very enthusiastic. Hadn't gotten her first, you know, I don't even know what they call them when they kind of pull people into church. She hadn't gotten her own. So this was going to be her first. She was like so naive and scared and happy and especially when she's. Yeah, eager. Well, look at her when she was posing with them girls when they're like, oh, can we have a picture just before they pants?
With her magic pants.
It is true. That's what Mormons do. But they didn't have to do that to find out.
No.
But she was posing. She was like she was in the moment. So you were like, and the other one, she wasn't having any of it.
No.
So it was like, you could kind of see what kind of people you had. So that switcheroo at the end where she... But even in that moment when she's with them women in them cages, they are her priority. She even gives one of them a coat because he's keeping them cold.
Yeah.
So she can, like, she does the best she can. She passes her coat to somebody. I was like, oh, she's even like thinking of others while she's in like the most dire place.
Yeah.
My thought when she got out is, I hope she gets them out.
To me, it was the whole... Like when he was revealing, like, why, when she says, like, why did you do this? And he's like, well, why did you let me do it? And he's basically said, all her ideas, all her thoughts, everything's been controlled by other people for her whole life. And he could see that. So he could predict everything she was going to do through the night.
Human nature's a scary thing.
yeah, definitely.
I've got a really important question, though, as well, because this I don't think they got this answer right. What is the best takeaway? Because they said it was Burger King. I don't agree with Burger King. Didn't they change it towards to Wendy's at the end, wasn't it? They said Wendy's.
My favourite bit was Taco Bell. We don't talk about Taco Bell.
No.
Because if we have to talk about Taco Bell, we're going to have to tell you what happened at Taco Bell. So we don't talk about Taco Bell. I love that conversation. The fast food restaurant. I don't think I have one.
Is it the closest one to you?
That'd be McDonald's. Probably Burger King. don't really have one.
It's just because, like, with all the different conversations that we're having as well, it was like, again, an odd conversation, but just seemed to fit at the same time. But it helped kind of relax the girls at the same time.
Well, because he was trying to get them to forget that they didn't have another person in the room.
Yeah.
And I loved that distraction technique. He did it so many times. And when they would bring it up, he would like be like, oh, and then he would say something else and start another conversation. So he was completely distracting them the whole time. But I loved it. You were talking about the layout of the house and the different rooms. I loved the living room and how calm and the colours in that were. It was so inviting to the point where the blonde-haired girl just ends up leaning back in the chair and she's just completely chilled out, while the other one is a little bit... This is what I mean about the characteristics of the two, because she sits bolt up. Like, she's so unsure of this person. But the other one's so chilled. Just chilled out. Sitting on the city.
Doing a little drum roll.
when he said that, you were going to have your drum roll, and she just looks at him.
But that is, I mean, he's got such that charm about him when he is being nice. It is like, you know, you could see yourself potentially falling for it, and then obviously he can switch to such sinister.
But without having it, it was effortless for him.
Yeah.
His cynicism starts from the very start, the minute them girls go in the house, and you don't get he's not your typical scary bad guy.
Yeah,
and this is it does kind of give a little bit of Buffalo Bill, because he wasn't, you know, your scary typical bad guy, like mannerisms, should I say, the tone of the voice, the way that they spoke. Quite like Buffalo Bill's quite a soft-spoken character, and he was very not so that like, his tone never changed into a harsh tone, even when he was a little bit frustrated, it still managed to stay. And I think that's the brilliance of Hugh Grant and that fantastic English accent he's got. Which I feel like has been a bit of a detriment to him in the past, because again, it's half the reason he got typecast as romantic English bumbling leads. But I feel like it did him a service here.
No, definitely. One thing I wasn't sure about in this movie as well, because I don't know, like, how old do you think the girls were meant to be?
I think at one point he questions, doesn't he? He says, like, oh, you're what, 19, 20? And they're just like,
right.
Yeah,
he seemed a lot younger. Paxton seemed a lot younger to me than Barnes.
This is kind of what's happened as I've headed into my, heading into my 40s. I'm in my 40s.
I've got to say, you're nearly 50 now, aren't you?
Shut the fuck up. You are older than me. As I'm in my 40s, I'm finding it difficult nowadays to put ages to younger people, because I'm like, I don't know. I don't know anymore. I generally don't know.
18, so everybody looks 12, but they're probably 20.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. But that was the thing, because, as you said, they were very naive at times, but not a, like, in. Again, if you're in the like Mormon lifestyle, you would be naive to like what norm would be. If she so the puppies were more inclined.
Oh, sorry, a conversation I've just remembered that I absolutely loved is whether we're talking about polygamy. I can't even say it properly. Whether we're talking about, he was like, so do you think Joseph Smith was just saying he had all these wives just to get away from, like, to get around these affairs? And I was like, oh, you tell them. Oh, tell them. I was loving it. I love that conversation. I was like, oh, you've so got it right.
So in there, so because I'm starting up a cult, I shouldn't be having more than one wife now. Is that a rule now? Is that...
Apparently, it's for the community, apparently.
Oh,
yeah, because she was trying to explain it like, well, you know, back in the day, they needed to be able to, like, repopulate. And it's like, but there was more than one man there. There wasn't just all these women. I love that conversation, because it is one that infuriates the life out of me when it comes down to the Mormon religion. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, we can have multiple wives. You fucking can't. You can't, but hey, sorry. It's just that conversation came flooding back to us, and I just loved it.
Oh, yes.
I do have a question.
Oh,
for you, where do you think, like, the women that were in the cages that he already had? How do you think he got them there?
I'm
like
glad...
the same way. Where do you think they came from?
No.
It's a question. I never even thought about it at the time.
It was something that I was pondering last night. He's so well tuned. This is not the first time, as he's got the women in the cages, it's not the first time he's played this game. Because
no.
He's so well rehearsed. He so knows, like, the stages he wants to go in. I don't think he's probably done it in the same way, but it could.
Different techniques,
different religions, because if you steal them from one religion too much, surely that'll start picking up. You would think, well, it is America, so probably not. People disappear and people don't seem to care over there. But, he would have to pick from different places or different areas just because it would, like, say, alert too much or bring to draw too much attention. But certainly I think he's played that game and he's done that whole control so many times. But the only thing, again, because you're doing it in a movie, probably in a TV show, you would get the breakdown and see the transformation a lot more, because it pretty much by the end of the movie, he was like kind of expecting like the character Sister Paxton to be subservient and to be broken, and she wasn't. She was more stronger at the end than she was at the start. Yeah. So it's almost like he, like, because with him not being God, he is fallible and he makes mistakes. He kind of chose the wrong one, because I think if he chose Sister Barnes, she, like, with her lifestyle and her, like, attributes, she had the more chance of breaking.
I feel like he, because if you know American cults and how they are, they do tend to stay within themselves. So if he's found a certain religion that has a cult following, he may have been able to entice people from there, because they don't tend to they tend to stick with themselves and don't tend to go to the law. So it might have been easier to target things.
Should have went for Scientology. They're all stupid, so it's fine.
But they would go to the fucking police. No, actually, would they? Yeah, they would. Unless it was their own, they would go to the fucking police. This is probably just hours upon hours of documentaries that I've watched on cults, and how their behaviour is. And
Becky, don't George... get scared. You're going to be fine. It's all going to be good. This is not an indoctrination. You're talking.
Yeah. She thinks. I'm not sure. It's a good question, and I haven't had a lot of time between the film finishing and now to think on it. I'm thinking kind of, could he have been targeting different women of different religions who were in close-knit communities where they wouldn't tend to go to the police in order for matters they would deal with themselves? Or am I really just really far reaching there? I don't know.
What about you,
Becky? I didn't think about it until
this
watch.
Yeah, so with you asking the question, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I honestly wasn't sure. I was like, is he just randomly picking them off the street? But then surely people would be missing them, and people would be looking for them. So surely they look like they've been there for quite a while.
So the question is, as well, because for them to do the walk and go to like these places, you've got to sign up that you want to have this conversation. Because that was the whole with Topher Grace's. He was kind of going back through the route and going back through the people that they'd meeting and spoken to or were meant to speak
to. People who've shown interest in the church and who've asked for more questions. So, yeah, I didn't realise that was a thing.
Yeah, because when he goes back, doesn't he, and rings again, and he's like... And you think, oh, yes, come on,
come back. It's that stare.
Get one of these.
This is where I thought that, oh, shit, this movie's going to change. Like, Topher Grace looks fucking terrifying at this stage because he's just standing there, stone-faced, and he's like, did you get one of these leaflets? I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. Even Hugh Grant's character's like, oh, thank God for that. Because he looks menacing.
Interesting take on that, though. Would the film have been more interesting or detriment if Topher Grace had turned around and been in on it with Hugh Grant, that he was sending the women?
I think I would have been lazy. I feel like that would have been lazy because it's then it's like Mr. Reed. I don't like that idea.
Clever.
You take away the cleverness, or you know, the sociopath cleverness of him, and give it to the Mormon Church, and that should never happen. No. They're not that clever.
No, but the only reason I ask, because Becky asked a great question, saying how did the other girls get there? That could have been like, I say, a way of writing that in, that it was basically like a farming system for Mr. Reed.
We'll give you X amount of women if you do, but there would have to be a give and take.
Yeah.
So what would Mr. Reed be given to them?
Topher Grace is his son.
Because would he really want Mr. Reed talking all these people out of believing? The Mormon.
The Mormons don't want their people to leave.
I'm just laughing in the chat because Chris is getting excited every time we see Mr. Reed, because with the second name being Mr. Reed, he thinks he's all in
puns. Oh my god, that needs to stop. I didn't even realise. So it's the last cut. I think that Mr. Reed is dead smart in that. Yeah, you sound it and that.
Yeah.
No, Chris.
So, anything else you want to mention about the film before we start rating it? Because, I think if we go over it anymore, we pretty much would just be talking about the film.
I think we'd be repeating ourselves because there's only so many key points, I felt anyway, key points to it that it brings, because you've got the religious aspect of it, the character base, and the overall story. I feel like we would start going over on ourselves. So I'm all out of this version of Heretic. But if we want to do the other Heretic, I can give you a link and we can, you know, see where that ended up.
What about you, Becky? I know you were asking about your notes and stuff. Have you any notes we haven't discussed?
No, I think, I agree. We've gone over like the key important stuff. So,
I think the main ideal that came from them is just question, as Sammy said, question everything, keep an open mind, and like I said, have the conversations that was in this movie. Like, probably not the context where you need to get two people in a basement to have them. But you can always have that conversation. I think it's quite an interesting take.
You don't need to prove that the miracle of life exists, because there is other ways of doing that. But the idea and the conversations around religion is incredibly interesting if you can keep your temper in check for a period of time, because religion can flare up a lot of thoughts and opinions. And so if you can kind of keep it, you know, civil.
I would be interested to hear from, because I'm not religious at all. And like you, Sammy, I think I agree with everything Hugh Grant was saying, but I would be interested to hear from people who are more of a religious background of what they thought of this film.
Without it getting too
nasty to what he was saying. And...
Without it getting too nasty, because it can turn into could turn into a nasty conversation, but I would be incredibly interested to know, not what we've said on it, but more what he has said on it, because the idea of it is exactly how I view religion.
So if you're going to rate this movie out of 5, now we've left off Action April, so we've left the action ratings have gone. This is not an action movie. Just out of a good movie rating, out of 5, what are you going to rate this movie? So we'll let lovely guest Becky go first.
So I'd probably give it like a 3.5.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
I think performances definitely help that. I think with different people, maybe it wouldn't have kept me as interested, but I was, and being such a small cast, I was invested in all three of them. And yeah, I did enjoy it. I enjoyed the conversations. So yeah, 3.5 for me.
Cool. What about you, Sammy?
I'm going to go with a 4. It's not a I don't see it being like, it wasn't, oh my God, this film is so fucking good. It was good. And I did enjoy it. There was a lot of things that, like, I love the dialogue in it. I love the characters in it. I love the attention to detail in development of the characters. Not Mr. Reed. I feel like he is a fully fledged person. We know exactly who he is from the minute you meet them. But with the two girls, I just found their development incredibly interesting, as something that I don't see very rarely in movies of horror these days. So that was really refreshing. The scenery, the aesthetics was absolutely beautiful. Again, I do look at costumes now because I love a good costume in a movie. It was good. What I really liked was the choice of shoes for the girls. I don't know if anyone noticed them. One of them had what you wouldn't deem as typical Mormon style shoes, the other one did, so you kind of got an idea from their shoes who they were. That was my take on it.
Trust me.
I said that religion, where you're getting told what kind of shoes to wear.
The reason why the Mormons are fascinating to me is because I've been on a bit of a deep dive with Laurie Daybell, whatever her name is. Her trial is being on Court TV, and I'm obsessed with Court TV. She is a Mormon who, her partner was part of a cult who believed that people were zombies, and if there were zombies, they had to be taken out of this world. She ended up killing her two kids, conspiracy to murder on her husband, and her new husband's then wife. So kind of been a bit
light watching for you there,
in deep with the Mormon religion at the moment. So this kind of like just was the cherry on top of the cake.
I'm gonna go with a 4, simply because I watching it the second time, I enjoyed it more, because you kind of enjoy the performances and the nuances in the movie a lot more than I'd say that I was taken in. I just loved the conversation. I loved how scary but unnerving scary at the same time. I love these type of horrors where it's the slow build. It's not where you're instantly getting going into like a ghost train where you're getting things jumped out at you or like thing. It's where you feel uncomfortable. You start not wanting things to happen, and when they do happen, you're like, oh, it's great. Like Becky said, you were worried towards the end where it was going to go. And I think they could have done more to where, rather than just, I know you're doing it all in the house, so it's only so far you can go. But going through the different stages or going through the different set pieces, I found that quite interesting. They could have went a little bit deeper with that. But again, we're talking like minute changes to a film that was entertaining the hell with, in theory, I know there's more people in this film, a cast of three that kept you glued to that screen for basically from start to finish. So, and again, for a horror movie, which a lot of people give horror a shit rap for, saying, oh, a horror's simple, horror's like not clever. This was a very intelligent horror movie as well.
And it managed to chuck a Jar Jar Binks reference in there. How could you not like it?
And you got Hugh Grant singing "I'm a Creep." But yes, so before we start telling what we've got planned for the week, so Betty, tell us a bit what you've got coming up. What have you got planned? What have you got? Anything interesting you want to tell us about?
Personal wise, we've got HorrorCon coming up. Going there for a visit in a couple of weeks.
Yay!
Hopefully I'll see you guys in person, which will be good.
Don't run away from us. We're not scary, I promise.
So on our podcast, we have just started covering a new TV show. Because we do a film, and then every other week we'll do an episode of a TV show. And we're now doing Safe by Harlan Coben on Netflix. So we just released the first episode of that. And then coming up, we're doing a Killer Animals episode. Just every so often we'll throw a random one in. So we're covering some killer animal movies. I think that's coming out next week. So that was quite a fun one to do, something a bit different.
Hope some beavers are in there.
They might have got a mention. didn't make the top five. But and then obviously in June we're doing Pride Month. So we're gonna be covering some interesting films as well. So
very cool. But yes, and if you want to check out anything of that Betty does, the links are in the description below. You can get links to her Instagram and to Spotify for, like I say, the podcast. And again, if you want to check out any of her reviews, they're loaded on her Instagram. They're on the Nerdy Up North YouTube. What am I saying? Website. That's do too many things. I'm going to cut something out. Everything's stopping now. Everything's cancelled. See if anyone panics there. But yes, so Sammy, what is coming out tomorrow?
Oh, guys. It's something. Mm-hmm. And it was recorded. And I watched it. We're doing the movie Freaked. Mm-hmm. So Monsters Up North will be covering Freaked. It is a 1993 MTV acid trip done by Alex Winter and his producing partner at the time. It's crazy. The film is absolutely horrific, but the makeup prosthetics is some of the best that Hollywood has probably ever done. And we will talk to you in depth tomorrow all about the makeup side of Freaked, because if you want to know about the film, we don't really talk about it that much.
It's got Mr. T in a dress. What more do you want?
That should have been how if you want to see Mr. T dressed up as a lady who and really fucking pulls it off, come and watch us tomorrow.
Yes, so that's out at 8 o'clock in the morning. We've got Top Grumps on Tuesday, where Lee and Chris are talking about Mr. fucking Blobby. I don't know why. And the crimes that Mr. Blobby has committed through the years. So that'll be an interesting watch. We've got Anime Club on Friday, where Phoebe and Chris, I believe they're doing Chainsaw Man, I think.
If you want clarification for Chris's in the chat, and he ain't going to get it, so let's just say that that's what it is.
Yes. I believe there's got other stuff that's coming out. Countdown to Doomsday will be coming out on Saturday. I think Jake's doing Rumblecast next week as well at some point. I don't know. I'm just trying to think now. If this is all the stuff that you can check it all out on YouTube, check it out on Spotify, check it up on Apple Music. You can find us pretty much anywhere.
On YouTube, please remember to like, share, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you don't miss an episode.
But yes, and again, join the Facebook group. It is quite friendly. We have a laugh. Join the Discord. It's full of idiots that are in the chat now, just talking about something I don't even know what they're talking about now. But yes, but thank you, everyone. Thank you, Becky, for joining us. Thank you for being our first guest for Mia. Setting the tone and the standard for everyone else now. So same bat time, same bat channel.
Stay nerdy, everyone. Bye.
Bye.